Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity in the highway to the north, this is Safety Wars for Thursday, May 2nd, 2024. Been away for a couple of days. We got a lot of stuff going on here. Hope everything is going well with you and whatever it is you're working on. As I find myself saying, we're always improving. Right? Continuous improvement. That's part of what safety is. That's part of what safety is. Right, as we go along, we learn more. As we go along, we accomplish more. As we go along, we get more business here. That's what's been going on here. We've been doing a lot of stuff for clients at night here, and I haven't been able to be on the air, but that's fine. How's everybody else going out there? And we're enjoying this lovely summer weather here in the Northeast. We got to hit record on the board. Oh, wow. Yeah, we're enjoying this lovely summer weather here. It's May 2nd, but it's already been in the upper 80s here in the metro New York City area. So I want to remind you right off the bat here with everything. Hold on. Yes, you're on the air. I wanted to remind you right off, off the bat here, there is something called Fall Protection Week, and it is starting next weekend, next week, Monday through Friday. So if you're in the metro, New York, New Jersey area, as I contacted my clients and I got a couple of hits, if you are in the metro New York, New City is where I am, but the metro area, let us know. Give us a call, 845-269-5772, and you too can schedule a site visit from us, and we have a whole program set up for site work with on fall protection. So what I find out, and I was talking to someone today, and I'm not here to belittle anyone or anything like that with this, is this. The quality of fall protection training out there, it's a big deal. It's waning. It's, I go and do some of these fall protection classes, and you go out there, and it's like the people are like, I was never told this. I was never told that. I didn't know about this. And it's on basic fall protection. For example, fall protection distances. Right? So you have a 6-foot shock absorbing, or they call energy absorbing lanyard. Depending on the manufacturer, you need anywhere from 18 to 20 feet of free fall distance. And, you know, you got to check with your manufacturer of the stuff that you're using. All right. How is it that you're in the business, you've taken classes for 30 years and training for 30 years, and that you never heard of? And the guys, I said, look, are you pulling my leg? Are you serious? No one ever told you this? They said, no. And they said, well, prove that this is what it is. And I said, well, here's your, what equipment are you using? They said, we're using X, Y, and Z equipment. Well, here's the handout on that fall protection equipment right here. I have because I'm prepared because I know this is the kind of pushback that you get, but it's not really pushback. It's a question, and we'll answer questions here all day long. I have no issue with that. I have no issue with talking to people, in case you hadn't noticed. And you go out there, and oh, here it is. Oh, wow. Why didn't anyone tell us that? I don't know. And then we get into the whole thing is one of these things. What happened here? Was it that the people doing the training legitimately didn't know, or the company legitimately didn't know? Then, okay, well, there's no excuse for not knowing something really that basic if you're doing training. Okay, number one. And number two is, did they know about it and didn't want anybody else to know about it? Because then that means that they would have had to go to a 6 foot or 9 foot or self-retracting lanyard of some type. There's another term for it nowadays, right? But does that mean that? And what's the difference? So with a 6 foot shock absorbing lanyard, you could, back in the day, I mean, the most egregious violation with this was in 2005. Back in the day, the bidders on the job on a certain project I was involved with, they said, we're going to bid the job. So everyone has 6 foot shock absorbing lanyards and harnesses. When the appropriate thing to have was probably a fall, the work positioning or fall restraint system, with or without a shock absorbing lanyard, depending on your configuration, or a self-retracting lanyard. What's the difference? 6 foot shock absorbing lanyard, $45. The other types of the lanyards, $100 on up, even 15, 20 years ago. So the people bidding the job, they of course are going to go with the cheaper option. Well, guess what? They got a company on site, and that company doing the environmental management and the safety and the construction management, they said, well, why aren't your folks in self-retracting lanyards? Well, this was bid out for this. Now you're telling us we need this. And then they came up with all different silly rules, some of which I mentioned here in the distant past. Like anytime you leave the ground, you have to wear a harness and a lanyard. Well, not when you're exposed to heights of 4 foot or more or 6 foot or more, but anytime. That means that you get up on a catwalk that's fully railed, you got to wear a harness and a lanyard. Doesn't make sense. And it caused more problems, and it took, about 9 years for that facility to undo the damage and the public relation damage and the goodwill damage and everything else associated with job. It was because of these people coming up with crazy rules, and it was, as Fred Sutton described way back when we first started doing this, that the people were actually psychologically damaged by the job. But I digress. Yeah, it took about 9 years for the work crew the embedded worker to get over that contractor. But anyway, we go into this, right? Nobody is out there, doing the training really correctly unless they're accredited by a manufacturer. And all the I'm accredited by Honeywell to do fall protection training for them. And what it comes down to is this. It's incumbent on the employee to go and find out this information for themselves. If you're a leader in your organization, I'm not talking management. I'm talking safety professional, foreman, shop steward, person in charge, whatever, respected person. Go out and get the information on fall protection and share that with your crew with that. Because I tell you what, and this happened. I was involved in one fall protection situation where there was a fatality. It was actually two. One of them was one fatality. The other one was multiple fatalities. I got called in to do the accident investigation and implement new safety programs because of them. And everybody is so upset. Oh, I loved this person. I love this person. I'm going to miss this person. And later on, maybe it's my jaded point of view on some of these things. I said, well, did you love the person enough to stop them from work doing something dangerous? And that's a big ask for a work crew to go up to say to someone, hey, maybe you want to tie off to that. That's a big ask. Why? Because they are not the supervisors. They're not the foreman. They're not the competent persons. They're not this or not that. I've had a situation with another friend of the program where somebody, he pointed out a safety issue to someone. And the person said to him, believe you, I taught you how to work. You don't tell me how to work. So you know what his response was? Good, I'm never telling you anything about safety ever again. You can do whatever you want. You get killed, I'm not going to have a problem with it. And that was the response. So we had to address that with the work crew. And then they got used to people talking to each other on the site. Hey, don't forget your safety glasses. Don't forget this. Hey, let's time out. Let's go get the right equipment for this. And that was a process of 3 to 5 years to get people to do that. Not an easy task, believe me. That's where we need to go. Get the training, do what you need to do with that, get the right equipment, the right authority, and everything else, and help your fellow worker out. All I ask, look out for each other. I know that's a big ask. All I ask is a big ask. Because of the situations like I had just described, where people feel funny going and telling their coworkers to do whatever. I'm getting all these cords here in the way, moving the hands. So with that, we are going to take our first commercial break.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today.
All right, I don't know if that's coming over YouTube. For whatever reason, I have to put this stuff in post-production on here, any of these advertisements and everything. I apologize for that because there was like a long pause and everything else. I haven't been able to clear that up, but we're going to be getting on to new software here in the very near future, like next week on this. I haven't had time to set it up. All right. So I know on the live stream on Safety FM, it always comes across, not so much elsewhere. All right. So I want to talk about one thing, about something. Our main topic here, I tried to knock that out at the beginning, is not fall protection today. It is risk. You're going to say, well, Jim, that's like a real boring topic, risk. We're going to talk about risk. Yeah, we're going to talk about risk here. And it's something that we always talk about, but nobody really knows how to define what exactly risk is. And it's really important. Now, and this has wide-ranging application. So why does that have real simple? Risk is what we've been talking about, especially with the Columbia and now nationwide protests here at the universities, on the whole Palestinian and Israeli, Arab-Israeli conflict. We'll leave it on that. So I'm not, I have some opinions on it. I'm not going to really go one way or the other because we have listeners all over the place on this. That's not the purpose of my comments here. And it's also risk when it's in the workplace. So let's talk about it. We've talked a little bit about this. So this, and again, I use the government websites for this just so I don't get whacked here, so I can have a nice visual here. And you know, it's not from me, it's from the government. Right. What is the definition of risk? And this is from the Computer Security Resource Center, and it doesn't really matter what what this is. So a risk is a measure of the extent to which an entity is threatened by a potential circumstance, and typically, so, right, a function of, so risk is a measure, and it's a function of, right, versus, right, the adverse impacts that would arise if the circumstances or event occurs, and two, the likelihood of occurrence. So what that translates into the hazard matrix table. Where is the hazard matrix table? And it looks like I deleted it. So we're going to go into the hazard matrix table. And as always, government, right? Thing. And this is what we have. Is this the hazard risk assessment code matrix? Now, if you're in setting for standardized exam in safety, this is part of the body of knowledge. All right, not really much. I'm sworn to secrecy like everybody else, but I'm going to tell you this is probably something you should study because on some of the exams. They're all randomly generated. This is significant. On some of the other exams, it doesn't even come up. So what we have here is on the top row, you have frequent, likely, occasional, or rarely. On the left-hand side of this, we have catastrophic, critical. So on the x-axis, you can think of frequent, likely, occasional, rarely. On the y-axis, you have or downward column, catastrophic, critical, significant, or minor. Now, this is a little bit of, this is from the Bureau of BIA.gov. Now, you're going to say, okay, what's the issue here? So often on your job hazard or task hazard or activity hazard analysis paperwork, often they require a hazard matrix code. And if, and you have, you being the subjective person you are, because there's a lot of subjective stuff in my experience, how likely does this event occur? And what is the severity code? How do we apply this to safety? Let's say you're doing an activity that occasionally occurs, there's something that might occur, and the results are minor, first aid, or whatever. You're in the green area or a hazard matrix 5, right? On this assessment, I've seen them reverse, but this is here. This is of number 5, all right? Okay, at that, so that's good. You're green, you're good. Let's say that, hey, it's going to be a minor injury from this occasional thing. It's going to be a number 4, hospitalized minor injury, reversible illness. And then a number 3 is going to be critical, meaning is, hey, this occasionally happens, but you're pretty much F on this one. And then you have an occasional, which is going to be a 2. It's catastrophic. That means there's an imminent and immediate danger of death or permanent disability. You're really effed, right? And then you have the hazard matrix of one is when you're going to have a likely thing that's going to be catastrophic in nature, or a frequency A, which on the graph, which means it's going to be critical and catastrophic. It's likely to happen. It's frequently going to happen. It's a critical catastrophic thing, something real bad in the red area on this graph. So what normally happens is you have to add safeguards in your job hazard analysis to bring this from a critical area to, in the red, to somewhere in the blue and preferably the green area. Typically, an organization, if they're dealing with red boxes and ones, they say, time out, we're not going to do that. How do we make this more safe using the hierarchy of controls? We're going to try to eliminate the hazards, substitute a really hazardous thing with a not hazardous thing. We're going to engineer it out. We're going to have an administrative control, or we're going to have PPE. And an administrative control and PPE are the worst ways of handling things. And an administrative control includes rules. All right. Now, so what's the issue here? So this is a hazard matrix. Now, let's say that you are somebody who is managing someone, and there is no risk to you personally. This is the way people think, by the way. If you are in a toxic, dysfunctional workplace, and even the ones that are not so toxic or dysfunctional, or have sociopaths running the show, which there's a lot of them out there, this is how the thinking is. All right, I have never seen this type of thing happen. I've never been on a job with a catastrophic or fatality, catastrophic injury or cat, right? Or, so therefore, we're working in the green area, meaning it's never happened. We're working all the way on the right-hand side. It's never happened, number one. Number two, when it does happen, nothing much happens. I mean, when it happens, nothing happens. So guess what? We're going to be working there. Now, that's what, and they're very convincing when they speak. Believe me, these are usually the people that have the ear of management and of the workforce and everything else. They're very convincing when they speak. They're very articulate, and they're like, hey, and they bank on you not having training. They bank on you not listening to programs on the Safety FM network, like Safety Wars, like Rated R Safety Show, like all of Todd Conklin and all the other friends in the program and everything else. That's what they're guaranteeing here. Now, you don't know anything. Now, your coworker knows nothing. Nobody ever falls off a building. Nothing ever happens. What do you mean? We don't need industrial hygiene here because nobody ever dies, or they can't track this. And then you figure out 50,000 people a year die from chemical exposures in the workplace. Yes, I am getting on a rant. Flat shirt does that sometimes. So this is what happens. The other thing is this. When you're dealing with certain personalities, what is the risk to them personally of things going wrong? Think about it. If you're let's say you're outside of New York, because New York is, and some of the other states, now New Mexico, after the Hannah Gutierrez Reed situation with Alec Baldwin, you are held culpable when you're a supervisor or a competent person and things go wrong. Now, usually not the case, though. And so one of these people dies, the worst thing that's going to happen to me personally is I'm going to lose my job, at which point I'll get another job, and unless something hits the newspaper, guess what? My old employer cannot go and talk about me and give me a bad reference. So nothing's going to happen. Right? That's sorry, folks, we deal with reality here. You have the other situation of something bad will happen and the employer is not going to do anything. So we're just going to go on and, hey, that's the cost of doing business. Guess what? A lot of construction companies operate that way. A lot of construction companies work that, and other companies, someone gets hurt, we take them out the back gate or we take them somewhere, they cover it under their own personal health insurance policy, or we deal with cash to keep it off the books. So what happens? It's only going to be a minor thing for them. There's no risk to, because we're at zero. Nothing's ever going to happen to that supervisor. Will the company get sued? Guess what? There are companies that we cover them here all the time. These companies go out there and say, well, hey, we don't have to, we'll go out of business. We'll do this, we'll do that. So the severity of whatever is going on, regardless of the injury that happens to the worker, to the company, to the individuals managing them, are zero. So guess what they're going to do? They're going to go out and they're going to say, I don't give a darn about safety. I don't care about environmental because nothing's ever going to happen to me. And guess what? They're going to go and they're going to act accordingly. Now, this is changing slowly over time. Back in the 1970s and 60s, this happened all the time. I have friends that worked back then in safety. Right? And this is what there's no risk. This often happens. I've seen it happen. Hey, someone gets hurt, you guys, or we just call another one. Or the frequent meme, you could get killed today, your company will have your job in the paper or on the internet now, tomorrow. Right, looking for a new one. So if there is no consequences, there is nothing in there, they don't care, they don't have a conscience, guess what? They're going to act accordingly. Now, and that's for companies to address and other people. Now, we've had to deal with in this country in the last month, since October 7th, and it doesn't matter where you are on the spectrum. Remember, former political activists, right? How do these protests factor into here? For or against doesn't matter because we've seen it go both ways here. You are an organizer, and it was in the paper widely reported today, all over the media, that 40 to 60% of the people getting arrested in these protests are not students, faculty, and have no affiliation with the universities. So here's the question for you. What's the risk to these people? A lot of them, and I it used to be, well, there's no such thing as this. And then you show people the advertisement on Craigslist looking for people to protest, blah, 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 $10 cash an hour. People show up. And you see these things, but that doesn't exist. That's another thing called gaslighting. Or you're somewhere in a locale, like you're at an establishment, and Jimmy, come on over to this protest. It used to happen to me all the time in Washington, D.C. Go over this, and it's like, oh, okay, let me go over and see what's happening. And then it's like, oh, shit, I don't want to be here. Right? And you leave, and you make sure you leave. And why? Because some risk of my risk came into this. What did I say? I think that something's going to happen here, likely, and I think it's going to be really serious or catastrophic, two or one. So guess what? I'm not going to go in after that, into that situation. Except January 6th was in this case. I had people calling me up. I hadn't heard from in 10 years. Jimmy, come on down to Washington. And I said, look, there's likely going to be a problem there. And the effects are going to be critical. Guess what? I'm not doing it. I don't think you should do it either. So the persons that are getting paid here, and this is organized on each side here, All right. The organizers, there's zero risk to them because they're sitting behind a microphone. They're sitting, behind a microphone. They're sitting up 30, 40, 50 miles away. Guess what? They're okay. Yeah. Charlie, go down and do this. Frank, go down and do this. Shirley, go down and do this. Guess what? They're removed from the risk. They're not the ones getting arrested. They're the ones that they're running those GoFundMe pages. Fund our activity. Do this. Do this. Collecting donations. They're living. We're in the 900. This is why I got out of politics. They're in the $900 suits driving a Mercedes. They're 23 years old. They're an activist. They're getting paid. They're on someone's payroll or they're borrowing the cars. And then they're you're out there driving your 4 or 5 year old vehicle. No, your $200 suit. And this is what it is. They're over there drinking their Starbucks and everything else while everybody else is doing the grunt work. And this is not Jim being angry at you. This is what reality is. Now, you have all these people getting arrested. They're in there doing whatever, right? And they're the ones getting arrested. It goes both sides, it turns out, the last week. They're in there, and what happens? Think about it. Some of them, they're in their senior year. They're in their junior year. They're looking forward to getting the hell out of college. Thank God. Not paying those bills and everything else. They go and they get arrested. Now they have a criminal record. I don't know how this is going to turn out, whether they're going to quit everybody or just say everybody go home or whatever. If they do that, then guess what? They're in the green area and there was nothing there. And guess what? Nothing happened to them. Guess what? They'll be back doing something else. If, however, they have a significant, critical, or catastrophic response to this, meaning that they've been fined, they now have a criminal record, they now have they now went to jail. Guess what? They just ruined their future. And the leadership, what cost did they incur on this? What was their consequences? Not a lot. So this is, like I said, this is broad based. So now, you get arrested, you get convicted of something, and this is going through with the January 6th things, where people are getting, all different types of shenanigans going on here. A lot of this stuff, according to some attorneys I've spoken to, these cases, some of them are going to get thrown out of court, but the person spent all this time waiting for trial in jail and all this money on attorneys. So guess what? And again, those organizations you're protesting for aren't going to be paying for your attorneys. And you're being an act, they're not going to pay for them because they're not allowed. An organization in the United States is really not allowed it's shunned that an organization is going to be funding illegal activity potentially. That's not a good thing. That's not a tax deduction at that point. Now, I'm not an attorney. Don't check your attorney and accountant here. All right. Or I'm not a CPA. Go check someone else. But this is what it is. So what can't you do? You can't be a certified safety professional. You can't have a lot of some of the other credentials there. Any of the credentialing organizations, you have a felony or something like that on the books. Guess what? You just eliminated yourself. You're going to school to be a doctor, lawyer. Lawyer, not so much, but doctor, anything with a credentialing, guess what? You can't be that anymore. You go, want to be an actuary, right? Another safety-related field, potentially. Can't do that. You want to be a licensed psychologist, psychiatrist? Might not be able to do that. Now you got a lot of explaining to do. And the list goes on and on and on. Plus, these people are they spent 2 years out of school. They get thrown out of the school. Guess what? Now try to get, now they're not allowed back on campus. Try to get your transcripts. See how easy it is if you're going to go somewhere else. Oh, how come you got thrown out of that school and expelled? Well, I was doing this. Well, well, guess what? We don't want any part of you. Goodbye. All of that goes on. It's a very high cost to do this stuff personally. This is why you want to go out there and protest, go out there and protest. Like President Biden, to his credit, said, and Donald Trump, go out there right now. Hey, go out there, peacefully assemble, protest. We have them down here on Route 59 in Rockland County. They're protesting all day. Every Sunday afternoon, there's a protest. Going back for years on different issues. Go there peacefully there. Police are there. They're going over to Starbucks, grabbing their coffee. They're hanging out with the protesters. Say, hey, don't let this get out of hand. Okay, Mr. Officer, we're not going to get... And it's all peaceful and everything else. No issues. Then at the end of the day, you go, may need a permit to do it. You may not need a permit. You got a permit, whatever. Obey it. Obey the law. You go home. End of the day. Then you go to your town council meeting. You go to write your congressman or senior senator when they're in town, blah, blah, blah. And everything's all in there. That's how you affect change. You want to really affect change. Then you go, and we talked about getting people on the ballot. And getting people elected and get out the vote. We've talked about this the last week of September last year. You do all this stuff. You don't go out there and say, we're going to break the law. Guess what? You go out there and you break the law, you'll never, ever get anywhere. Right? And what's the risk to the politician? The risk to the politician is getting votes that are against you, getting what we call primaried, meaning that we're going to run someone in the primary against you and you're going to lose your whatever your thing is. That's the, and of course, that getting reelected is usually both sides a very high priority for most politicians. So, in summary, right now that I've been ranting here, who's in charge? Why are you doing what you're doing? If anything bad happens, are the people in charge going to be paying a price, or is it going to be you, the activist? Because I tell you what, if it's you, the activist, that's you can't overcome that. Very difficult to overcome that. And especially today with the cancel culture and all the other things that we have going on. I mean, shit on the internet doesn't die, people. You're going to be paying an awfully high price for what you do on this. And I know people get passionate and everything else. Just occurred to me also, what's the lifestyle of one of these professional protesters? I've known a lot of them. Known a lot of them over the years. What's the profile we're looking at? The profile that we are looking at are as follows. They own nothing because they've broken so many laws and done so much stuff that they owe people money. They owe, they may be on probation. They're trying to live as off the grid as possible, and they show up to all of these things, right? They can't, when they get arrested, they have no assets. So what's the judge going to do? Unless they throw them in jail, not too much. That's all part of the scheme. They live off of other people's prosperity and money. They are what we call, that's what we call parasitic living. This is what you got to deal with. And it goes on and on, and they want to wrap you. If you're an excited or incorrigible or credulous or gullible person, inexperienced, they're going to play on those emotions. They're experts at emotion playing. No, and manipulating emotions, and you're going to be the one that's going to pay the ultimate price here. That's all I have to say on that. And we're going to continue to say this and reference this. I should probably take this out here and put it as an independent thing, and we'll go from there. And in the workplace, hey, if you're a supervisor, nothing ever happens to you when people get hurt or the company doesn't care. Think about this risk matrix and consider what your next move is going to be. And we're going to go to our next commercial break.
This is Safety Wars, broadcasting to our brothers and sisters in the occupied territory of behavior-based safety. Get out your secret decoder ring. Here is your nightly message.
Learning is vital. Learning is vital.
In a world where danger lurks in every corner, one man stands as a beacon of hope. Jim Polzel, a veteran safety expert with over 3 decades of experience, now bringing his knowledge to you with Safety Wars. Engaging, informative, and always relevant, that's Safety Wars. Join a safety revolution with Safety Wars, available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos.
All right, back to our normal stuff. Reading press releases and analyzing these health and safety issues in the workplace here. I don't know. Is this at all useful to you? Maybe you got a family member, friend, whatever. Maybe you're involved in one of these groups. And again, what are you basing this on? 10 years of activism. That's why I'm not an activist anymore. A lot of reasons, but one of them was this sort of thing. All right. So here we have Department of Labor finds children employed illegally in dangerous jobs, obtains $4.8 million in wages and damages for poultry industry workers in California. In one of the largest wage violation settlements ever reached for U.S. poultry workers, a federal court in Los Angeles has entered a consent judgment that orders a company, two companies, and others as owners and operators of a network of California poultry processors and distributors to pay $4.8 million in back wages and damages to 476 workers. Settlement requires the employers to give up $1 million in profits earned from the sale of goods tainted by oppressive child labor and pay assessed penalties $171,919,000 for their child labor violations. So the April 30th, 2024 action comes after investigators in the department's wage and hour division learned the poultry enterprise illegally employed children as young as 14 years old to use sharp knives to debone poultry in violation of federal child labor regulations. We're going to look at this. They messed around with hours worked, overtime, and everything else. Now, as summer jobs here, and again, this is normally regulated by the state. So certain states, you cannot do certain things. In other states, you can do certain things. So you got to check your local child labor laws and everything else that are out there. So here we go. Kids under 18 cannot operate power-driven meat processing machines such as meat slicers, saws, and meat choppers were ever used. Kids under 18 cannot clean, and this is from the DOL.gov, kids under 18 cannot clean such equipment, including the hand washing of the disassembled machine parts. Kids under 18 cannot operate this machinery on items other than meat, such as cheese and vegetables, the meat. So I don't know, you're not allowed to operate this, but okay. Kids under 18 do most jobs in meat and poultry slaughtering processing, cannot do most jobs in meat and poultry processing. Power-driven woodworking machinery. Kids under 18 cannot operate power-driven woodworking machines, including chainsaws, nailing machines, and sanders. Compact balers. Kids under 18 cannot operate balers, compactors, including trash compactors, or certain power-driven paper products. Forklifts and skid steers. Kids under 18 cannot operate, ride, or help use most power-driven hoisting apparatus, such as forklifts, non-automatic elevators, skid steers, skid steer loaders, backhoes, man lifts, scissor lifts, cherry pickers, work-assisted platforms, boom trucks, and cranes. Kids under 18 cannot do most jobs in the forest fighting, forest prevention, Forest fire prevention that entails extinguishing an actual fire, timber tract management, forestry services, logging, or sawmill operations. Not allowed to do power-driven bakery machines. Not allowed to work with metal, meaning power-driven metal working machines, including forming, punching, and shearing machines. I think there is an exemption on this. Might be an exemption on this if you're in like a vote tech situation. Kids under 18 cannot do root work in roofing. Ooh. Meaning, right? Most roofing operate. Power-driven saws, not allowed to do that. Kids under 18 cannot drive motor vehicles. Cannot use explosives. Cannot do demolition work or ship breaking. Cannot be involved in mining, radioactive, brick and tile, that include the manufacture of brick, tile, and similar projects, and cannot be involved in trenching and excavation. I'm going to say this. In some states, they cannot even do construction work at all under 18. So you need to check your local laws with that. The other thing is this. If they happen to get a job, right, that if they happen to get a job, right, you're fortunate enough and everything else as a parent, what do you got to do? They do not do safety training. Don't do it. So maybe your gift that for high school graduation or even before you go to summer job, why don't you go out and get them some safety training? Might be a good thing. Get them a 10-hour outreach course. No, you're not allowed to do 10-hour outreach courses for under 18. I think. Well, guess what? I don't want to see any parent bury a child or see any child hurt where they're permanently disabled at 15, 16, 17. No. All right. Department of Labor investigation of Boston window cleaners, 29-story fall. Finds employer again failed to inspect and replace protective equipment. Now, this is what one of the issues is. Yes, I got a haircut. I had to scratch the top of my head. All right. This is one of the issues here. People, and I tell people, if you are a fall protection competent person or any other competent person for that matter, you have to show and demonstrate that things were inspected. How do you do that? You got to go and you got to get paper or an app, as they do nowadays, to go and do that. They likely will not accept your word, right? They likely will not accept your word that you did your job and things are inspected. They want to see something in writing. And I am talking either the attorneys or OSHA or any other regulatory agency. They don't want to hear, oh yeah, everything was inspected. They're going to be like, okay, prove it. You have no way to prove it, you're screwed. Company's screwed. If you're in New York, you're really screwed. But if you're in a company, you know, you're screwed. So this is what it was. This company out of East Boston, right? Failed to adequately train employees on how to inspect ropes for maximum allowable wear. This is for suspended scaffolding. To recognize defects in the condition that warrant removal of service and proper use of the rope descent system. The ropes in the rope descent systems were not effectively padded or otherwise protected to prevent them from being cut or weakened. They allowed the use of rope descent systems. This looks like it was a Bosun's chair, right? Still there use Bosun's chair for by window cleaners. Allow the use of rope descent systems, lifelines, and lanyards for personal fall protection that were not compatible with connectors and unprotected from damage such as cuts and erosion, and failed to use only certified building anchorage for rope descent systems. So you have to have appropriate anchorage points. They have to be certified, if not by a competent person, by definitely by a qualified competent person, not not some of the confident people we talk about here, where it's their first time on a construction job, they're getting paid $1 more an hour, and they're a confident person, they're signing all this paperwork, and then you ask them what training and experience you have, you're 22 years old, and they're like, this is my first construction job, or I've been doing this for 6 months. And you ask, say, okay, you're the confident person for industrial hygiene. And then you look at you, and they're like, what's industrial hygiene? And then you wonder why we have 50,000 deaths a year. All right. You know, so it's got to be someone, confident person who's got the qualifications to do this. Then it's likely going to be this is under OSHA. I don't know what the laws are in Massachusetts here. All right. A qualified individual, which could not necessarily an engineer, somebody who's qualified to do it. Either experience, training, professional standing, things of that nature, a qualified individual to tie off on this. Again, let's see what we have here. OSHA cited the predecessor companies, probably with the same EIN numbers, in May 2019 and December 2013 for the same violations. Scroll on down. Citation 1, item 1. Serious. The employer did not ensure that no employee uses anchorage before the employer has obtained written information from the building owner that each anchorage point meets the requirements of paragraph B1I. This is under general industry. The employer did not keep the information for the duration of the job. So under OSHA, you have to have written information from the building owner. Could be a competent person. In this case, it could be a qualified person. But somebody has got to sign off on something. In this case, the building owner. Citation 1, item 2. The employer does not train each employee in the correct use of personal fall arrest, 1910-30. Right? This is under general industry, $16,131. Citation 1, item 3. Serious. Again, those ropes not being protected, $16,131. Citation 1, item 4. 1910-140. Same deal. Ropes, belts, lanyards, lifelines, and harnesses used for personal fall protection are protected from being cut, abraded, melted, or otherwise damaged. $16,131. Here's the big one. Citation 2, item 1. Willful serious. 29 CFR 1910.27. The employer does not ensure the rope descent system is inspected at the start of each work shift that it is to be used. Employer does not ensure that damaged or defective equipment is removed, $161,000 plus. Citation to item 2. Again, inspection of fall protection equipment, $161,000. Citation 3, item 1, repeat violation. Again, employer did not ensure that the ropes were protected, $32,000. Citation 3, item 2, the employer did not train employees, $32,262, for a grand total of $447,087. Something to consider. All right, that's what we got on that. And again, they did it again in 2013, where they got a de minimis fine of $3,000 might have prevented, might have prevented a fatality here. Had this been a harsher fine, I'm sorry, with this. Well, our point is compliance and not punishment. Well, obviously this company didn't get it. And here we have another one back in 2019, a whole bunch of, de minimis penalties. Some of them are with the same thing. They didn't get the message. Just something you got to consider here. I mean, call your congressperson. U.S. Department of Labor finds found in South Carolina shipyard ignored federal measures that could have prevented a 41-year-old worker's fatal fall. I think they're warming everybody up for Fall Protection Week. So this is in a shipyard. Now, shipyard is a different animal, because OSHA normally looks at what you are doing in a shipyard. So if you're like repairing a building in a shipyard, that's construction. If you're on a ship, that is a shipyard, 1915. They're going to cite you under that. Let's see what they do here. Citation one, item one, 1915.82. That's the shipyard standard, 1915. Where the only means of illumination on a vessel or vessel section, this is serious, was from lighting sources not part of the vessel or vessel section, the employer did not provide portable emergency lights. No emergency lights, $16,131. Citation one, item two. The employer did not assure hard hat use to protect you from overhead. Now, I am not going to mention the employee's name here, but this is interesting though here. On or about November 11, 2023, inside a blah, 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 blah of the U.S. Naval Service, meaning it's a merchant marine ship, U.S. merchant marine, I believe, or a United States Navy ship, not a USS, but the United States Navy ship. A first lieutenant did not have temporary lighting or portable lighting being used is not adequate. I didn't know that they had jurisdiction here, but oh well, you learned something new. The employer didn't was no, nobody was wearing protective helmets. The same first lieutenant, right? Employees, I'm sorry, that is the ship, USNS. Okay, that's the ship. I'm sorry, I'm getting mixed up here, a long day. All right, so this is the name of the ship, U.S. Navy ship, First Lieutenant Jack Loomis, right? Employees were not wearing hard hats, 12,676. Citation to item one, scaffolds, no lack of scaffolding, right? Guardrail system, inadequate, $161,000. Citation three, item one was zero. Flexible cords were not connected to devices and fittings so that tension would not be transmitted to joints or terminal screws. All right, $0 on that for a grand total of 190. So this was, the ship was the first lieutenant, Jack Loomis, and this is for a company working on the ship. So this was a U.S. Navy ship being serviced by a private company. No, wow. Incredible. And this is also in the press release, since 2019, four employees have died on the job at the ship and repair service company, including two others involved in fatal falls, 2020 and 2022. Since 2014, OSHA has allegedly identified 33 serious violations at this facility. I don't know what to tell you on this one. So that's all I got for you for tonight. We're going to do our outro here, and we will get back to you tomorrow, God willing. What's tomorrow? Friday. For Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel. We will be seeing you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.